Top of the morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, your host for today's Daily Dollop of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This is part two of a two-part story that was first published on August 3rd, 2025, under the headline, How Oregon Almost Became Part of Canada, eh? Here we go. Yesterday, in part one of this two-part story, we had just gotten to the part where the Tonquin had been blown up, marooning the Astorians on the far side of the continent. But the damage done by the Tonquin and its captain, Jonathan Thorne, went far beyond the loss of this ship. Thorne's bargaining style had not only cost the expedition its ship and stranded Fort Astoria in the wilderness, it sent a really powerful message that the Bostons, as they called the American traders, were dangerous and untrustworthy. Other American traders kept reinforcing this message, too. One of them signed the death warrant of the Astorians' entire upriver trading operation by having an Indian lynched for stealing a goblet, even though the Indian returned the goblet when asked about it. Stranded in Fort Astoria, one of Astor's partners, Duncan McDougall, became convinced the Indians would soon turn on them and slaughter them. The crafty McDougall headed this off by pretending to have a, quote, bottle of smallpox which he would uncork if attacked. Whether this kept an Indian attack from happening or not is debatable. McDougall was himself a devious schemer, so he was always on the lookout for evidence that others were scheming against him. But it certainly didn't make the Astorians more popular, and it did little to shake the growing impression among the local tribes that the Bostons were just too unpredictable and dangerous to do business with. That included selling them fish and venison. The Indians, who had flocked around the fort to trade when the Astorians first arrived, now disappeared into the woods. They seemed to be actively avoiding contact. It was going to be a hungry winter. Meanwhile, a little northwest of Missouri, the Overland Party was reaping similar harvests of bad decision-making by American explorers. Specifically, it was something Meriwether Lewis had done several years before, on the way back with the Lewis and Clark expedition. When a couple of Blackfeet lads tried to steal some of their horses, Lewis's party stabbed one and shot the other. For Blackfeet, stealing horses was a lark. Killing someone for stealing a horse to them was like hanging the kid who painted the town water tower, John Deere Green. Lewis made it infinitely worse by hanging a Jefferson Peace Medal around the neck of one of the corpses. After that, Blackfeet became implacable enemies not only to American traders but Spanish, French, and British as well. So the Astorian party had to find a way west that didn't cut through Blackfeet country, and Blackfeet country was very, very large. Lewis and Clark might have blazed a good trail to Fort Clatsop, but it was completely unusable. They had thoroughly burned the turf through which it passed. As a practical matter, it might have been better if they had just stayed home. The Astorians did actually pretty well for about the first two-thirds of their journey, although their leader, Wilson Price Hunt, seemed not to understand the need to hurry so that winter would not catch them in the mountains, as, spoiler, it actually did. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. One day, the party found itself standing by a sweet little river, flowing northwest, the direction they wanted. The river was quick but calm. And the footsore voyageurs, those expert paddlers, were overjoyed to see it. The voyageurs convinced the rest of the team that they should give up their horses and take to the water. Hunt, whose response to a tough decision was usually to think about it a long time and then put it to a vote, went along with this plan. So the party got busy hollowing out big cottonwood logs into dugout canoes before launching into the river, Henry's Fork, which drains into the Snake. Anyone familiar with the Snake River can guess what happened next. There they found themselves stranded, with no horses and not much food, having lost at least half of the canoes to the Rivière Enragée, or Mad River, in the middle of the Snake River Desert, in what's now southern Idaho. Most of the overland crew did manage to get through to Astoria, but they only managed to beat a rival British expedition by a few months, and they utterly failed in the part of the plan that involved establishing trading posts along the route. And then the War of 1812 broke out. Well, this was a problem. A significant number of the partners and employees of the Astorian project were British subjects. All of them now felt a little weird working for the Americans, even in a strictly commercial context. To make matters worse, Wilson Price Hunt, the guy who was supposed to be in charge, had sailed off on the Beaver, the ship Astor had sent around to replace the Tonquin, and did not return for more than a year, as the ship's captain had opted to spend the winter in Hawaii, you know, as one would like to do, and return to Astoria in the spring. So the British partners kind of had a free hand in his absence. At the urging of the crafty Duncan MacDougall, they used it, and sold out the operation to the Northwest Company. Astor was not consulted, and of course he was livid when he learned what MacDougall had done, but he could do nothing about it, and when Hunt finally came back to the fort he was supposed to be in charge of, he found a British flag flying over it. He can't help but thinking it kind of served him right. But with that, the Columbia River was now entirely in British hands. A month after the sale, the British warship Raccoon sailed into Baker Bay and seized the newly purchased fort. When told he was seizing British property, the captain retorted that his orders were to seize the fort, and damn it, he was doing so. The fact is, the captain and his crew were angry and felt very misled. They'd been expecting several fat Yankee trading ships and a warehouse full of valuable otter pelts under a foreign flag, which would mean the sailors would all stand to gain a bit of booty as a prize of war. Finding very little of the good stuff, and what there was under a friendly flag and therefore off-limits, was not a welcome sight for them, and they were not inclined to do anybody any favors. Okay, now comes the interesting part. Well, the most interesting part, perhaps, from a geopolitical standpoint. When the war ended, part of the negotiations centered around the Oregon Territory and who would get to claim it, Britain or the U.S. The final treaty stipulated that all prizes taken in the war must be returned, resetting everything to the status quo antebellum. Well, the status quo antebellum involved an American flag flying over the most important spot at the mouth of the river. It wasn't sold until after the hostilities broke out. So the Astorians briefly got the fort back, although they immediately returned it to the people they'd sold it to, as a deal was a deal. But the most important result of this was, at the treaty table, both the U.S. and Britain had claims and credible presences in the Oregon Territory. So when their status was made official by the resulting treaty, the official status of the Oregon country changed from up for grabs to joint occupancy. That meant that any Brit or any American could move to Oregon and claim land. Imagine for just a red-hot second that Fort Astoria was sold 1 year earlier, just before the war broke out. In that scenario, the whole Columbia River is British. It wouldn't even come up in the treaty, most likely. Sooner or later, negotiations would ensue about where exactly the limits of the Louisiana Purchase ended and the British Oregon country began, and the border would likely have ended up somewhere around the Continental Divide, or maybe a little to the west of that. Had that happened, the Oregon Trail would have been a dead letter. Nobody was going to launch a fleet of prairie schooners to Homestead in Wyoming or Montana, and few American citizens were likely to want to try and travel to Oregon and arrive tired and broke and hoping for the best if Oregon was foreign territory. Those Oregon Trail emigrants flooding out to Oregon and setting up housekeeping were the pressure that pushed the British to relinquish their claims on the Oregon country. It was just too full of Americans for them to hang on to it with the small handful of fur traders and Hudson's Bay Company men that they had there. Feeble and incompetent as they were, the Astorians did beat that British expedition and established an undeniable colony in Oregon. Had they not done that, Astoria would have been founded by the British Northwest Company, and the United States would have been very unlikely to be able to establish a presence in Oregon, and then we'd all be speaking Canadian today, eh? Key sources in this story included works by Peter Stark and OregonEncyclopedia.org. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Offbeat Oregon History is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house, about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. In addition to Offbeat Oregon books, audiobooks, and this podcast, we publish book and audiobook versions of collections of what you might call street literature. 1920s pulp magazine writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Rice Burroughs, gothic penny dreadful titles like Sweeney Todd and The Adventures of Highwayman Dick Turpin, all straight shots of bottled-in Bond working man's fiction and working women's fiction from the last couple centuries. If that sounds like your jam, I'd love to have you check them out. You can find out more at pulp-lit.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and learn more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.